Okay. So how do you feel about the way that your partner speaks to you? Are there things, perhaps, that they said at the start of the relationship that you let slip, but now, some months or even years later, you find problematic? Tonight on Ask Dr. Josh, we're looking at the comments made by your partner that may seem sweet and attentive and kind or cute when you first start dating, but actually are red flags that can hint at toxicity in your relationship. So that's our topic tonight on Ask Dr. Josh. Is the way your partner talks to you toxic? And joining us, as every week this time, is behavioural scientist and psychologist Dr. Josh Klapo. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening, Sarah Jane.
So listen, why is it important to be vigilant? I mean, there's such a thing as being hypervigilant, isn't there? Over-vigilant, over-interpreting things to the nth degree about the way that your partner talks to you, even from the very start of the relationship.
Yes, that's toxic too. So I absolutely, I mean, in the beginning of a relationship, you kind of see both sides of the coin. You'll see the beautiful bliss and the love and the lust, and nobody's really paying attention that much to what is said because everything sounds wonderful. Then you'll see the other piece where it's usually one partner is analyzing everything, and it's kind of from a place of insecurity. So you don't want to do that. But at the same time, you don't want to let the, if you will, the intoxication of love cloud what can be red flags that often emerge later after the honeymoon phase is over.
So some of the things that, and I was thinking about past relationships that I've been in, and also when I was younger, things that I thought when I was younger, oh, this is a sign of, you know, true love, whereas actually it was a sign of insanity and possible mental health issue. So I was with somebody once, and he used to say to me, I can't live without you. I can't live without you. And I thought, oh, of course you can't. How could you possibly? I'm the bee's knees. That must be a really good sign. It was only sort of so horrified is Dr. Josh by that realization that he's decided to abandon the conversation. Imagine, we'll get him back on the line. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the way that your partner talks to you toxic. And we're talking about things that perhaps get said at the start of a relationship that might seem terribly romantic and terribly caring and terribly attentive. But actually, if they're still being said a few months, even years down the line, hint perhaps at something rather unhealthy, perhaps insecurity from your partner. I'm just sharing when I was going out with somebody, I think I was probably about 19 or 20, and he said, oh, I can't live without you. And what I actually realised was that it wasn't so much he didn't want to live without me, as the pressure that was being put on me to continue to perform or appear as this, I guess, somebody who being put on a pedestal was actually quite problematic, and the pressure it put me under to continually remain the person that he fell in love with and the person that he was attracted to initially, which actually is quite unsustainable. Are you back, Dr. Josh? Were you so horrified by what I was telling you that you just decided to opt out of the conversation?
No, I thought it might have been something I was about to say. But I caught up this last part, and I hear about the you're way too good for me and you're all I have.
I mean, that initially might sound very nice, that, you know, I can't live without you. But actually, for somebody to say that repeatedly, particularly if it comes in more and more threatening tones, that's never good, surely. I can't live without you. Well, you might have to one day. I might get hit by a bus tomorrow.
That's right. So I think that every once in a while, in the heat of passion or romance or the sort of pinnacle of love, and you're looking at each other in the eye, and you whisper it out once, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, it doesn't even have to happen over and over and over and over again. If your partner's saying, I just can't do it without you, even if they are saying it from a good place, it's not a good sign, because it begs the question, what is it, who is this that I'm with, and why can't they do it without me? Because they should be able to go on without me, because that's a sign of human strength. So again, saying it once should not bring up a red flag, because we say things when we're intoxicated in love. But if you hear it a few times, and particularly if you've heard it after you've all been together for, you know, 6 months, a year, you should be scratching your head a little bit and maybe even say something to your partner.
Mm, okay. Another one that, again, it might seem lovely, and I guess it's along the same lines, but it freaks me out. You're all I have. Josh, you're all I have.
That's right. Right, well, even, again, that's one in particularly in this day and age, and I would not recommend, if they say it from the bottom of their heart, in the goodness of their heart, don't call them out in mid-sentence. I mean, that's just not nice. But if they do say it, and then things settle down, you may ask them, you know, what did you mean by that? I know you meant it from a good place, but you want to hear from them, what do you mean that I'm all you have? Because sometimes, Sarah Jane, it could be nothing more than, that's just my way of professing my love, and I didn't have the right words to describe it.
Mm.
That's okay. But if they literally say, there's nothing in my life that is nothing in my life except you, you got to get worried. You got to get worried, because that's not a healthy individual. It's just not.
Here's what, and I think for me, my perception of what healthy even means has changed so much over the years. And I think when I was, you know, going into my first serious relationship, I mean, the dysfunction that I come from was such that there's no such thing as boundaries, really. And the things that you think you should be looking for in a partner, actually, you should be running away from, you know, as fast as your legs can carry you. But the thing, I used to believe that actually my partner should be everything to me. They should be friend, they should be lover, they should be parent, they should be all therapist, because I thought that's what love meant. I thought it was, you know, you essentially giving all of yourself to another person, because that's very much what was being reflected to me when I was growing up. But now I love the fact that when I, you know, the people in my life all have different roles, and my siblings are my siblings, and my parent, or my parents are my parents. And as much as sometimes they may fight and want to move out of those roles into other things, it's really important for me that they just stay as my parents. My therapist is my therapist. Nobody else in my life is my therapist. Because that's too much of a burden to put on people. I mean, it's, it's not sustainable to be, as they say, what's that? You can't be all things to all people, and you can't be all things to one person.
That's right. Well, and you can be bits and pieces of it, and different. We all, so none of us are necessarily all of those things in perfection the way you described. And if you think about it, it's kind of like a soup or a recipe. Some of us may have a natural bit of therapist in us. And while we, you know, and I'm using that as an example, while you should never be your therapist to your significant other, that may be your knack, and you may be there in that sort of way. You may be a little bit more parental, a little bit more nurturing, right? And so in that way, it's okay to show those pieces. But there is, to your point, if you are looking to your significant other to fill all roles in your life, and fulfill all roles in your life, then two things are going to happen. One, you are setting the person up, you're sticking together for complete failure, because they never can. Two, you are now putting yourself at such great risk, because to the extent that person is not there for you, you don't have the means to go at it on your own. Mm-hmm. And that's what's most important. I always say this, Sarah Jane, coming into any relationship, three parts of the relationship: person number one, person number two, and the relationship itself. All three must be healthy and strong. anytime any one or more of those has problems, then the whole triad has problems.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Another one, which I've also heard, because of course I have, because I've been in so many dysfunctional relationships. You're way too good for me. I don't deserve you. You're way too good for me. That to me is just manipulation 101. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, or that's the pedestal.
Right? Or the pedestal, yeah.
So it's either manipulation, and that's the hard, and here's for your listeners, either one is bad, whether it's manipulation or the pedestal. Both are bad for different reasons, but what it says, again, think about this. If you say to somebody, you're way too good for me, and look, I've been happily married for almost 20 years, and there are times when I've said to my wife, you know, I'm married up, you are way too good for me. Mm-hmm. But I don't say it every day. I don't say it. I say it when something has happened, when she's done something above and beyond. And I say it not in jest, but there is a little bit of kidding to it. But if you're saying that over and over again, what you're basically saying is the flip side of that, which is, I'm not good enough. Mm. I'm not good enough. And that's not healthy for your partner. As a partner, you don't want to hear that.
I've heard that, and I've also heard something which I think sort of tallies with that, which is so you've got the you're too good for me, but I've also heard don't change a thing, you're perfect. Which nobody, you know, and I say that, and it sounds ridiculous, because I mean, what sort of person would say that? But don't change a thing, you're perfect. Well, nobody's perfect. And also, it was said at a time when actually I really did need to change, because actually what I was doing to myself at the time was pretty unhealthy. And in fact, what I really needed to do was make a massive change. But what I saw in that was this other person's insecurity that if she changes, I'm gone. Because she'll realize what a complete dick I am, probably.
Yes. Well, yeah. So that happens. So don't change a thing. You're perfect. When you look deep into their eyes, the first time you say, I love you, it's okay to say that. Mm. It's okay to say that once. Mm. But the don't change a thing. You're perfect basically says freeze. I want you to freeze in time. And what it also says is, to your point, it's almost an ultimatum. It's a love ultimatum. Well, what if I want to change?
Yeah.
What if I do make a change?
Yeah.
Right? So it's a compliment, and yet it's also a line in the sand. Many people will say it not even thinking. But if you hear this multiple times over the course of your relationship, and particularly when that intoxication, you know, after 6 months, a year, 2 years, if they're saying, don't change a thing, one of the things that you can say is, what would happen if I did change a thing?
Mm.
Would you be okay if I change? And you'll quickly know, right in that moment, you'll know, are they just saying it as a communication of love, or are they deathly afraid that if you change, they're not going to be able to hang with you? Because a lot of times it comes out of their own insecurity.
A friend of mine lost a great deal of weight, and she was never, you know, very big to begin with, but she lost weight, and she really got her body sort of healthy and looking great. And as the weight started to come off, her partner started to act more and more obnoxious, essentially, and more possessive and controlling, to the point where eventually when she reached the goal weight that she'd been hoping for and felt good about herself, whereas previously she really hadn't felt great about herself, the minute that she felt good about herself, he bailed. Couldn't handle it. And it wasn't even, you know, his thing was, well, now, you know, I guess you're hot property now. You look great. And the fact is, there's going to be more people, and I'm following this through as a train of thought, perhaps, but there's going to be more people who now, you are drawing their attention. And perhaps you may realize that actually, I'm really not that great of a person.
There you go. Yeah. Mm. It's sad, actually. As a psychologist, I hear that. And I hear, it's terrible that it happened in a relationship, but But I feel sad for that guy because what that guy just did through the process of being obnoxious and possessive is what he's telling you is I don't have enough confidence in myself that I can hang with you when you're at your best. That's exactly what he's saying. And particularly for men, I know it's going a little off topic, but particularly for men, when we get insecure, we tend to get obnoxious and possessive. That tends to be our... It's obnoxious is where we go.
Why? Why do you do that?
Why do we do that? Because society has told us that we shouldn't cry and we shouldn't show weakness. Society says don't show weakness. So what we do is we turn insecurity and fear into an outwardly aggressive behavior, which is more socially appropriate. But underneath, we're just scared. We're just scared that you're gonna leave us because we're not good enough. That's what we want to say, but instead what we say is, you know, you better watch what you're doing, and you better watch who you're talking to, and you better. That's just us. That's idle threats. Yeah. Where we just feel insecure.
Oh, it's pathetic.
Sorry.
No, listen, I think I've also been guilty of that. So here's another one, and this again I find problematic. Don't you trust me? Oh, but yeah. Josh, don't you trust me? Again, it's that thing of if it's being said in the context of something very real and, saying, well, hold on a minute, don't you trust me? As in, and it's a genuine question that needs to be answered and a discussion needs to be had around it. But to hold it over someone's head as a threat of don't you trust me? Because if you tell me you don't trust me, well, then where can we possibly go from here if you don't trust me?
That's exactly it. So in the beginning, it's the mystery, right? It's the unknown. I'm putting my faith in you. I am showing my vulnerability by giving you that trust. But then past that point, it's a no-win situation. Because if I do trust you but call into question what you're doing, then it looks like I don't trust you. And if I don't say anything, then I no longer have a voice in the relationship. And that's something, that one in particular, is a red flag for somebody who may be very manipulative. Again, say it once, okay, explain it. I see couples all the time where one calls the other one, calls into question what the other one is doing or saying. It's okay to say, look, we've been together for a year. Don't you trust that I'm looking out for both of us? Or don't you trust that I want the best? That's a conversation. But just looking at them and doing that ultimatum of, don't you trust me? That's scary. Very scary after the first month or so.
So what should one's response be to that then? I mean, because to me, that's just me putting on my sneakers and running out the door. Because it's a red flag to me, really.
So red flags are a good litmus test for a relationship. What I mean by that is we all throw up red flags in relationships. We all come with problems, and in the course of any relationship that survives, red flags are going to go up. It's like the surf, right? It's a day where something is dangerous, something is bad out there. Okay. The litmus test for the relationship is, can you throw the red flag up and then work through it so that it goes from a red flag to a green flag? And what I mean by that is if someone says, don't you trust me, and they've said it 16 times to you, and it's starting to get at you, then what you do is you test the red flag and say, you know what? You say that a lot. And I do believe I trust you, but when you say that, I have no recourse. I can't express my opinion. And so I am concerned that I don't have a voice here. Let's talk about that. Their reaction is the litmus test. The reasonable person may say, you know what? Oh, geez, I never thought about it that way. Or they may even get mad at you, but then come back around. But if they dig in and say, look, if you don't trust me because you're calling into question what we're talking about, then we have nothing here, then it's time to bail early rather than seeing the whole thing through.
How about when somebody says to you, you know, if you're in a conversation and some advice perhaps is being proffered that may not have even been asked for, and a conversation takes place and your partner says, well, you know, I'm only trying to help. I'm only trying to help. Oh, that sounds so passive aggressive. I'm only trying to help.
Yep. I may need you to help. It's not as, I would call it a not a highly toxic. It's more of a, it's an irritant.
Yeah.
It's a pollutant. And it's what I like to call with my clients, it's the death by a thousand little irritants.
Mm.
Right? So that's not the gigantic, oh my God, this person's nuts. Or oh my God, there's a personality disorder here. It's a little bit more of a condescending, particularly if it's coming from a man.
Yeah.
Well, it's either man or woman splaining is like it's that kind of sort of condescending approach.
Mm.
That, you know, again, once, fine, repeated, call it out. And that's what I want you listeners to know. It's okay. If you have a strong relationship, you can call your partner out on something and your relationship will survive.
Mm.
So many couples are so afraid to call each other out because they think, oh my God, if I say something, the relationship will be over. Well, let me tell you something. If you call your partner out and that ends the relationship, you didn't have a relationship.
Hmm.
A good relationship, a strong relationship, can tolerate arguments, can tolerate debates, can tolerate fights as long as it's moving towards some sort of resolution. If you avoid all of these red flags for fear that the relationship might be over, you don't have a relationship to begin with.
Yeah. What was it? I think I mentioned this last week as well, and that somebody once said to me, there's two, you need to look at why it is that you're fighting. Are you fighting to build or are you fighting to, what was the other thing? I can't remember. Fighting to destroy or fighting to build.
Fighting to win?
Yeah, fighting to win or fighting to build. Exactly, that was it. Yeah.
If you're fighting to win, now listen, we're all human. And as I said, I've been married a long time. There are times where you get in and you start fighting to build, and something happens midway through, and now you're fighting to win.
Mm.
And it sort of comes over you. And one of the healthiest things that you can do, and it's not always possible, is when you feel yourself switching from, I'm trying to figure this out with you, to, damn it, I'm going to get my point.
Mm.
That is the time where you need to say, you know what, I need out. I need out of this conversation. I got to calm down. Because you may want to win, but winning the argument in a relationship, as good as it feels in the moment, takes you back three notches in the relationship. It does.
Mm-hmm.
So better to step out and get back in to build the relationship than to try to get your point across, win, feel great about yourself, and then realize you just brought your relationship down a notch.
What about situations where old arguments or old issues get brought up again, or the same behaviour keeps happening? And I guess we're kind of touching on that now, but where you've expressed to your partner, listen, I really don't appreciate this, but it continues to. Whose problem is that? Whose problem is that?
That's a tough one, Sarah Jane. This one is complex because it really comes down to a couple things. One, how much are you willing to tolerate? You know, in the course of a relationship, there are things that your partner is going to say or do that no matter what, they're not going to change. That is who they are.
Mm.
And so the question becomes, how bothersome is that to me? How much can I tolerate? What am I willing to do as an individual? The second piece to that, though, is, are they doing it? Are they doing it in a way that is not respectful to me?
Mm.
What I mean by that is, are they throwing it in my face? Are they not putting enough effort to curb it because it's very important to me and they just don't think it's important? So really it becomes, are they trying but screwing up, or are they stopped trying to address that old piece? If they've stopped trying or they refuse to try, and you say to yourself, this is really important to me, now you have a problem. Now you have a problem that probably needs some therapy or some guidance to get past that. Because ultimately, what they're saying is, I'm not willing to do this for you. And what you're saying is, this is bothersome enough to me that if we keep doing this for years and years and years, it's going to erode our relationship. That's when you go to therapy. Other things, you know, sometimes you bite the bullet and you just go, you know what, on the whole, I love you. That drives me freaking bananas, and I can tolerate just that as long as you don't add on three more.
Yeah. Interesting. I like that you said it being an irritant or a pollutant. Yeah, I think a lot of people probably relating to that. So if you are just joining us and you've missed the conversation, do not fret. You can, of course, go back and listen again at omni.fm. We will also be sharing it on our Twitter pages at This Is SJ King and at Dr. Josh K. As always, Dr. Josh, great to chat with you. And we'll chat again next week.
Sounds good. Have a good evening, Sarah Jane.